and Rose Levy with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a longstanding journalist of health, food, the environment, science, policy, and advocacy for all of the things that we need in the world to go right to protect our health, the health of our communities, and the health of our planet and habitat, planet Earth. Each week on the show, we discuss with different authors, activists, scientists, policy experts, thought leaders, filmmakers, and doctors, and a whole host of other people, all of the interconnected things going on in our world that affect us and our health and our families and our communities. And that includes the health of food, water, air, and earth, the health of the products we use, the health of our society, and the ecological stability of our planet. On today's show, we're going to be talking about a hot topic right now in the news cycle. It's actually a theme that I personally have written about and been covering for over 15 years, and that is the intimate relationship between toxic products that we use in our food supply, in our personal products, in our energy, and their relationship to our health, and the degree to which scientists have had the independence and the support and financing to really investigate the links between this whole interaction and world of chemical products and the health problems that so many Americans are experiencing. So this has been an ongoing theme, and it popped up, and, you know, I think it's a real linchpin in the health and environmental communities and food communities. You know, it's like, what are these chemicals that we've been taught to trust and take for granted? How safe are they really? And if they aren't as 100% safe as we trust, what do we know scientifically about how they affect us and the interactions between us, you know, within us, between themselves? And we take, you know, several of them, you know, are exposed to multiple amounts of different ones all the time. That's something that really hasn't been looked into very much. And this week, in the current administration, the House Science Committee is investigating and accusing a government scientist for doing science. There's been an article this past week written by Sharon Lerner in The Intercept, January 22nd, 2018. It's definitely worth a total read if you care about these issues. And certain representatives on the House Science Committee were accusing Linda Birnbaum, the director of the government's National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, of lobbying. This accusation came about because Birnbaum wrote an editorial in a science journal talking about the gaps in the regulation of toxic chemicals. So, you know, here, as in other instances, the administration is undermining science. It's undermining the ability of public scientists paid for by taxpayers on our behalf to do the job they need to do to protect our health and environment. Joining me today on Connect the Dots is someone who can provide a deep expertise into this discussion and the analysis of what we need to be kind of looking at and for and demanding. My guest today is Arlene Blum. She's a PhD, a biophysical chemist, author, and also the executive director of the Green Science Policy Institute, as well as a research associate in chemistry at UC Berkeley. The Green Science Policy Institute brings together business, government, scientists, and citizen groups to support chemical policies to protect human and environmental health. Susan Arlene Blum, rather, herself has done an extensive amount of research and policy work that has contributed to preventing the use of flame retardants and other harmful chemicals in children's sleepwear, furniture, electronics, and more. And, you know, she has a really fascinating background. You can read more about it on her website, arleneblum.com. And, you know, we're going to be talking about what's going on, what needs to go on, and what the implications of all of this are on today's Connect the Dots. Welcome, Arlene Blum.
Delighted to be joining you to talk about this important topic.
So, you know, let's just talk for a minute to, you know, about Linda Birnbaum. I've had the pleasure of meeting her at conferences and gatherings on these topics hosted by doctors. So she is the director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. And what is her job in fulfilling that role? Like, what is her actual job, and how well has she been able to do that job?
Well, Linda is really the country's leading toxicologist. That means someone who studies toxic chemicals. And she's also leading the field of environmental health. And what that field is the connection between substances in the environment that can harm our health and us. And the sad fact is there are chemicals that are known to cause serious health problems that are in everyday products to which we're exposed. And people do not have the information to avoid these chemicals, and the government does not take the action that they should be taking. You know, most people believe if a chemical's in their couch or their carpet or their shampoo, someone's making sure it's safe for their health. And the fact is, our government often isn't. Linda's organization is a scientific organization that is gathering the necessary data so that we as consumers can make better choices, and the government should do, could and then should do what their responsibility is, which is to protect our population. And so Linda is really a leader. She's brilliant. She's outspoken, and she has made such a difference in her career.
Yes, I totally concur with that. You know, because this is the area of toxicology, which is, you know, what her special brief is. That's her scientific training. That is what her brief is in terms of, you know, doing exactly what you're describing. And yet, you know, so I think what happens is that when this administration tries to suppress government scientists and all science in different realms, when it comes to the realm of climate, there's been a big so-called debate. In fact, 99% of the world scientists don't think there's a debate. They all agree. But thanks to funding by prominent individuals like the Koch brothers, you know, there's been a lot of media and misinformation put out there, creating confusion in certain segments of the population. And, you know, in fact, climate change is not real. And that's convenient to the industries whose activities and services actually contribute to the undermining of climate and therefore our habitat and life on Earth, you know. And so right there in that particular battle, which is quite well known, we see that, you know, what the needs of life protection for people, all species, you know, in the Earth are on one side, and what the needs for corporate profits are on the other are in an opposition. And the same thing exists in this area, except that, you know, they have basically been the corporate pushback on getting any kind of really helpful research and regulation in has been so suppressed, so successfully by corporate interests, that it's not actually an area where Americans are completely confused about the science. They may be sold on consumer trust. Oh, we can just trust that the government is doing something, and that may be a big mistake, as it is, and I know you'll be telling us more about that. But here again, we see the needs of industry opposed to the needs of health and people. And it's so interesting, I feel, Arlene, that the two representatives, Lamar Smith and Andy Biggs, accuse the scientists of lobbying, and they themselves have received money from Koch Industries, ExxonMobil, and other companies that have a financial interest in limiting research on the environmental effects of chemicals. So, you know, of course, they think of lobbying and the idea that a scientist of integrity is actually doing the science to try to protect the people, you know, is something that they are now mischaracterizing as lobbying. I'd love to hear your response as a scientist to the utilization of science as lobbying?
Well, this is actually just kind of ridiculous, I think. And I actually don't think it will go too far. I think that's the good news. I mean, Lamar Smith also doesn't believe in climate change. You know, one thing you may not, climate change has been really politicized. It's kind of, you know, it's crazy. If you're a Republican, you're not supposed to believe in climate change. It turns out in this area of chemicals, it's a bit more complicated. Because when you say industry, you mean the chemical industry, and they unfortunately want to sell all the chemicals they can, and they want to keep selling old toxic chemicals rather than possibly moving to healthier new green chemicals. On the other hand, industry does include manufacturers, retailers, a lot of other people, and they actually would prefer not to have toxic chemicals in their products. So until really recently, this has not been so much of a partisan divide as climate change, which is like good news. I have, as you've mentioned, we worked a lot on flame retardants, and I don't know if you know that we were actually able to change or update a standard. There was a standard in the U.S. that led to 5% of the weight of the foam in all the furniture and baby products with foam containing toxic flame retardants, which came out, caused health harm, and didn't provide a fire safety benefit. A very bad situation. And the chemical industry, of course, totally wanted to keep selling chemicals. They didn't care. But we were able to change that with the help of a lot of manufacturers, retailers, trade associations. So actually a lot of industry, and a lot of them were Republicans. I mean, it's interesting. So and it was very helpful in changing it to have support from both sides of the aisle. So the issue of toxics has not been as partisan as climate change. And it's very unfortunate. And there are certain people like Lamar Smith who, you know, do, as you noted, receive money from industry and take their positions. And this is unfortunate. But it really is the chemical industry. So I do feel more hope with this issue of toxic chemicals since, you know, all the manufacturing and retail industries actually are bigger than the chemical industry, though they're not as, you know, the chemical industry's whole purpose is to sell chemicals. Did you realize that there is support from some Republicans and some other sides of the aisle for healthier, safer products?
Well, that's very good to know.
Way before.
You know, one thing I wanted to ask you about flame retardants. You know, one of the in the task of educating the general public to the health impact of chemicals, you know, I think there's an idea that, you know, a little exposure is, you know, okay, it's not going to hurt us, then it will go away and dispel. You know, that's one kind of myth about toxic chemicals, and that may be true of some but not of others. And the other is that, you know, we as consumers could, you know, decide if, you know, and our choices don't really, you know, they may affect our own health, but they don't matter to anyone else. But I think one of the interesting things about flame retardants is that, you know, my or your, someone else's choice to use products that contain them actually has a global impact on people elsewhere that aren't making that choice. Isn't that the case? I mean, don't these chemicals actually travel, some of them, or flame retardants in that category? Are there other chemicals that, you know, we use here, but, you know, it goes all the way into the wild because, you know, we can't really confine the exposures just to the consumer who's making the choice in every instance, can we?
Absolutely. It's a huge case of environmental injustice that the consumption and use of not only flame retardants, but highly fluorinated chemicals, the stain and water repellents that are even worse, and other toxic chemicals. We choose them. We use them. They cover the planet, and the people with the highest levels are often indigenous Arctic people, Arctic wildlife, because they travel to the North and South Pole, and they just stay there. So it's hugely unfair that the people who aren't even using them can suffer the most from them. You're absolutely right.
So we're actually, and you know, one of the things that happens is there's a sense of this is a big country. What goes on outside of our borders, is not my concern. You're someone who has been a mountain climber and world traveler. I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, your perspective on that kind of belief, you know, that, oh, we are free to make consumer choices in this country. Not realizing that we're making choices, you know, for many different populations and wildlife as well. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is, I don't know if you ever went to Disneyland, like in LA, years ago. You were a child, maybe. Anyway, there's a ride that's called It's a Small World.
And, oh, I remember that very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a small world after all, and that's right. What I think about toxic chemicals. It's a small, small world. We are all connected, and the chemical PFAS that we put on our carpet to make it stain repellent not only ends up in our baby and us, it ends up in the polar bears in the Arctic and impacts their fertility. So definitely our choices travel the world. They last. That stain repellent chemical does not break down ever. It will be on this planet a million years from now, possibly after mankind has disappeared, if we don't get our act together. Peoplekind, sorry. Mm-hmm. Our choices matter. With regard to flame retardants, it's harder. We don't really have much of a choice. With flame retardants, it's all about regulations. If they are required by law, manufacturers have to put them in, and we really can't buy products without them. So for flame retardants, bad laws have to be changed, and that's one of the things we've been working hard on at the Green Science Policy Institute. If people Google greensciencepolicyinstitute.org, they can learn a lot about flame retardants, how to avoid them. But basically, laws have to be changed because often these laws, unfortunately, are made by the lobbying efforts of the flame retardant producers. And they are very busy making laws requiring flame retardants in things like nursing pillows, high chairs, strollers, where there's absolutely no fire safety problem and there's no benefit from adding the flame retardants. So, it's really, it's something we can't do much about flame retardants as individuals. We can do a little, but it's quite expensive. You know, if all the furniture contains flame retardants, to buy an organic couch can cost twice as much. Most people can't afford that. The good news is we, working together with a lot of other nonprofits, Earth Justice really helped, we're able to update the U.S. It was really California's furniture standard, which was followed throughout the U.S. Several years ago, we were able to update it. So if anyone goes to buy a couch or that sort of furniture now, there's very likely to be a label, and it will say whether or not the couch contains flame retardants, and most couches no longer contain them because they're not required. And it turns out the people who make the couches were so delighted when the law changed because once they discovered how harmful the flame retardants are, we had worked with them and explained it. They didn't want to expose their workers or the public to these toxic chemicals, and so they also worked very hard to get things changed so that flame retardants are not in our furniture anymore. So that is a bit of good news.
What about other toxic chemicals? Because we talked a bit about flame retardants. What about other sources of toxic chemicals? And what about how these various chemicals interact? Because, you know, one of the things that I've long noticed is that they're measured one by one. And when you educate the public to the concerns about them, people will say, oh, it's only a small exposure, as if one was exposed once. And then somehow magically it went away and one was only exposed, you know, to that one chemical. And of course, we scientifically, scientists have to measure one chemical at a time, or, you know, several chemicals that maybe go together in a product, you know, in a widely used chemical product like flame retardants. But, you know, in fact, we're not just getting one exposure, are we? And how does that interact?
To begin with, a lot of the chemicals of concern are endocrine-disrupting chemicals. They mess up our hormones. Hormones work at incredibly low levels, you know, like just a few grains in a swimming pool, so to speak. And they mess up our hormonal systems, and they harm our health. And so a lot of these chemicals work at very, very low doses, and we are exposed to multiples. And except for the flame retardants, they're not required by law. So it is possible to make choices. And maybe I'll take a minute now and explain. We have what I consider a very useful way of thinking about this, and I don't know if you had a chance to look at our six classes website. Does that sound familiar to you at all?
Well, you mentioned it, but we have to, you know, tell the listeners, so please do.
Right. So I'll tell the story and just say that they can learn a lot more if they just go to sixclasses.org. So the story is there's more than 80,000 chemicals in production, and it takes years to get information on the toxicity of a chemical and to get enough data to phase out a single chemical. Mm-hmm. And if a chemical is phased out, industry wants to keep things as similar as possible, so there's a tendency to just move to another chemical that's very similar. This is called a regrettable substitute, and when you think of 80,000 chemicals, it just seems impossible, and what can you do but sort of put your head down and get poisoned? So we got together with a number of noted scientists, and indeed Linda was one of the people involved in this. And we came up with the realization that there are certain families or classes of chemicals that contain most of the chemicals of concern in our everyday products. And there are actually six families that contain a big chunk of them. And that one can learn and understand these six families and then try to avoid them. And so we actually, at that website that I mentioned, there's some 4-minute-long videos on each of the six classes. So that means in under half an hour, one can learn about the six classes, and there are a number of hints on how to avoid each class in these 4-minute videos. And so the class that we're now really focusing on, which I think is probably the worst, is the one I'd mentioned, the stain repellent and water repellents, because those chemicals, they're forever chemicals. They never break down, ever. Many of them stay in the human body a long time, and they move really fast all over the world, like you said, to the Arctic, and they're ending up in all of us. And they've been shown to be associated with cancer, high cholesterol, and a whole series of other health problems. And so, you know, if a mom is told, well, you can have a nice stain-repellent carpet with these fluorinated chemicals, but the chemical is going to be in your baby's body, you know, for years and on the planet forever, she might choose not to use those chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, our way of thinking about it is in these families. There are 3,000 highly fluorinated chemicals, but they all share those properties. So you really don't want to go from one fluorinate, you know, like certain ones have been banned, but they're replaced with other ones, and it just goes on forever. So you say, I don't want any fluorinated sprays on my couch or my carpet. And that's a way of making your home environment a lot healthier.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that let's just kind of delve a little bit into, you know, the sense of the dose. You know, if you mentioned that, you know, the equivalent of a tiny drop in an entire pool of water would be potent enough to have a health impact. And yet, you know, this conceptually, I think, is very hard for the average person to understand. You know, for example, and one of the things is also that, for example, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has been extremely hostile long term, is most conventional medicine to homeopathy, which actually teaches just such a similar thing, you know, where the actual basis of the remedies is like a drop of something in water that's shaken. And so most people go, well, that couldn't possibly be potent. And yet what you're pointing out is that, you know, a tiny drop of something in, you know, hugely diluted could also be problematic. And concurrent with what we are talking about here today, you know, is a draft guidance document recently undertaken by the Trump administration's FDA to declare homeopathic products illegal. I don't know where you as a scientist stand on any of that. And I don't want to draft you into defending something that you may find scientifically questionable, but I'm just kind of noticing the parallel areas here and wondering, you know, what the science can teach us.
Well, hormones work at very low levels in our body, and endocrine-disrupting chemicals do also, and I'm personally neutral on homeopathy. I don't mm-hmm. think that for me there has not been enough science for me to mm-hmm. believe it, so I'd rather not go in that direction. Mm-hmm. But I do know that it's, you know, it's very challenging for consumers because there's so many products and so many chemicals and so much lack of transparency. Mm-hmm. So we've worked very hard in our little four-minute videos to actually, at the end, we give four or five things that consumers can actually do to reduce their personal exposure. But really, the choices need to come, you know, the people who manufacture the products, they have the time to really learn what's in them and to remove these harmful classes of chemicals. Our government, and you know, in spite of, you know, we all know how challenging our government is at the moment. In spite of it, in this area of toxic chemicals, there's actually a number of promising, optimistic things happening, if you can believe. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to tell you some optimistic things
Certainly.
From our government
mm-hmm.
for a change? So, one is, around this class concept, well, let me just do a quick thing on flame retardants. I don't know if you know this, but in the 70s, I did the work on flame retardants in kids' pajamas, which most people remember, even if they weren't born then, right? You know about how there was toxic Tris in kids' pajamas, and it was banned. Mm-hmm. That sounds familiar, right?
Yep,
and probably to most of your listeners. So there was a chemical called brominated Tris. It was in all the kids in America's pajamas. It was 10% of the weight. We discovered that it went from the pajamas into the children, and we discovered that it changed DNA and was likely to be cancer-causing. And those days, the chemical industry didn't fight back. 3 months later, it was banned from kids' pajamas, which was a great thing. The whole generation of people who were babies in the mid-70s were not exposed for very long. But when brominated Tris was removed from kids' pajamas, the replacement was chlorinated Tris, and we did more research, and chlorinated Tris also changed DNA, likely to cause cancer, and was removed from kids' pajamas in the 70s. But chlorinated Tris continued to be used in other products, like our furniture, which is indeed how I got involved in flame retardants. So flame retardants, meanwhile, the flame retardant industry continued to push for more flame retardants. I mean, a really extreme thing that we don't know is, as I said, everybody's furniture pretty much until recently, the foam was like 5% by weight flame retardant. So if you had 20 pounds of foam in your furniture, you had a pound of toxic flame retardants in your home that would come out, drop into dust, you'd get dust on your hands and eat a sandwich, you'd be eating flame retardants. And that was true across the country, and apparently virtually all Americans have flame retardants in their bodies, toxic ones, that are contributing to their cancer, neurological impairments, contributing to infertility, really harming the health of our population, and our wildlife. Like all honeys in the world have flame retardants, which means all bees do, And that's not why the bees are having these problems completely, but it's not helping their health, you know. Bats who are doing very poorly, amphibians, they all have flame retardants. So everything has flame retardants. The purpose of these flame retardants was to try to prevent 30 fire deaths a year, 30. 300 million people had flame retardants in their bodies, and they didn't prevent any fires. So 10 million people would have flame retardants in their bodies to not prevent one fire, if you can imagine. So it's so out of control. And as I said, the good news is people who have new furniture who can afford to buy it no longer have flame retardants in their furniture, in their dust. Their children should be healthier. It's a really big deal. On the other hand, there's, as always, an environmental justice issue, because what happens to the old toxic furniture? It ends up going to low-income communities who... and furniture has several owners of up to 10 years each. So, you know, 20 years from now, when those of us who have new furniture have much healthier environment, tragically, you know, the people who are already exposed to the most air pollution in their work are the most exposed, also could still have toxic furniture. So I went off on a little digression, but I think it's important for people to understand that. And actually for people when they... One of our hints, when they buy furniture, do look for the label. And almost all furniture now does not contain flame retardants. There'll be a label. It'll say whether or not it has flame retardants, and it's likely to say it doesn't. So people, that's a thing people probably don't realize, but they can really make a better choice. And that's something individuals can do, but it's the manufacturers, the retailers who really can make a difference. And indeed, we've worked a lot with IKEA, that we've educated IKEA around this concept of whole classes of chemicals. And in 2014, they said, you know, we're going to remove the whole class of the fluorinated stain repellents from all our products worldwide because we realize they're harmful and we can make our products without them. And a year later, they said, we've succeeded. You know, we've got... They're water repellents, so they said we have them out of our shower curtains and our umbrellas and our raincoats. And they said there's a tablecloth that really we can't seem to not use fluorinated chemicals. We're not going to sell that tablecloth anymore. So IKEA really took a lead as a responsible retailer. And when we had meetings, Crate and Barrel heard that IKEA had done that, and actually Crate and Barrel said, we're not going to sell spray-on finishes, these water repellent finishes. If you go Crate and Barrel and say, I want a spray-on finish on my couch, that they don't sell them anymore because they know that they contain these toxic chemicals. So, you know, so companies can make these choices, and that makes it much easier for consumers because it is so hard. You know, we had trouble with our six classes. We came up with four or five suggestions of things consumers could do, but it was hard to come up with them even because it's hard to know what's in. That's a big problem. What is in your product? You know, there's a complicated supply chain. Companies don't disclose. They say things are confidential business information. And it's really hard to know what's in products and to make safer choices. Anyway, I think I digressed, but I hope.
No, I think that's a really important point because, you know, one of the things that has happened in our country is that we've been told that, you know, we have power as consumers. We have rights to consume if we can afford it, whatever we can afford, and that's the sole criteria. And the impact of the choices on both ourselves and on others is kind of little seen. And not only that, but it sort of supplants our role as citizens. You know, it's like I can make a choice to use this toxic product, which may affect people and wildlife around the world. You know, as an American, I could make that choice, but somehow my identity as a consumer does not, it sort of supersedes my identity as a member of planet Earth, as a citizen in this society, where, you know, as a group that may lobby or boycott manufacturers, which is considered a real no-no because we don't want to affect someone's business, but we don't think of our collective and social rights and obligations and entree points for, you know, making changes that will help everyone. And as we're discussing right now on today's Connect the Dots with Arlene Blum, we're talking about, you know, how you were explaining how manufacturers were the right leverage point for certain kinds of products. And there are, you know, places where consumers can make choices, but it's not ubiquitous. It's not like everything could be determined by our choice. I remember, and I think this is maybe going back as long ago as 10 years ago or so, I did a radio show with somebody, you know, an expert from the Environmental Defense Fund, and he said, he was talking about flame retardants at that point in time, and he said, you know, they're ubiquitous. They're around the world. They've circulated. You know, we can't put the genie back in the bottle. And I had someone tweet me, you know, who's listening to the show, and the person said, seconds after he had made this statement, my husband and I want to have healthy children. Where in the world should we move?
Yeah, and that's the sad thing, because remember, it's a small world after all. You know, I think, honestly, well, you know, just to say advice for someone like that is a lot of these chemicals are found in dust, and pregnant women are the most vulnerable. So there are things, you know, pregnant women and before the chemicals stay in your body for a long time. So if you know you want to get pregnant, before you do, you know, it's good to make sure that your foam in your furniture does not contain flame retardants. You can actually, without like getting rid of your whole couch, you can swap out the foam in the cushions, which is helpful. It turns out the foam in the arms and the backs are unlikely to contain flame retardants, so people can do things like reduce their flame retardants. The PFASs, the fluorinated stain and water repellents. Also, you know, you don't want those treatments. These chemicals, they're called semi-volatile, so they come out of products. They're heavy and they drop into dust. So, you know, doing a lot of vacuuming with a HEPA filter, doing wet mopping, wet dusting, just keeping down dust. And hand-to-mouth is the main exposure, so it's good to wash hands before eating. There have been studies relating the level of these chemicals on a toddler's hands to the levels in their bodies. So for pregnant women, they just really want to reduce dust exposure, reduce flame retardants, reduce the fluorinated stain repellents. I mean, I think that's the best we can do because, you know, these chemicals are on the whole planet pretty much.
Animals would be effective, too, because their animals are, you know, companion animals. They're walking around on the floor where the dust is, you know, rolling around and all the rest of it. So it's also affecting animals. I mean, has that been looked at all?
Yes, it's really, really sad, indeed. I think I said that all honey in the world has flame retardants, which means all bees do, and they're not helping their health. Pretty much everything does. And in terms of our pets, maybe that's what you're referring to.
There's
a mysterious epidemic of hyperthyroid disease in cats. When I started doing this work, I had a black cat, Midnight, who was this healthy 15-pound cat who suddenly became an unhappy 5-pound cat. And my vet said she had hyperthyroid disease, which causes great weight loss. And that when he went to vet school, they thought they told him they'd never see hyperthyroid disease in cats. It didn't exist. And now his practice, you know, was seeing several cases a week, and he thought it was a chemical, and he thought it might be a flame retardant. And I realized that flame retardants cause, you know, they're endocrine disruptors. They disrupt the thyroid system. And there was data that a particular flame retardant that was used in a lot of furniture caused thyroid problems in rats, mice, kestrels, frogs, and workers. And so my vet found a veterinary epidemiology study, and we studied my cat and my dust, and both had very high levels of flame retardants. Since it has been shown, not conclusively, it's hard to do these studies, but there appears to be a pretty strong relationship between flame retardants and hyperthyroid disease in cats. And in dogs, there's a lot of dogs getting cancer at a younger age, and there's studies relating that to pesticides that are cancer-causing on lawns. So definitely us, our pets, and wildlife. You know, I saw at a scientific meeting, I saw a poster that was really sad to me saying that so any of the chemicals, they're the highest levels in creatures at the top of the food chain because they build up. You know, so it's like if flame retardants wash into the ocean, which they do from our wastewater, and they end up in little creatures in the ocean, they're eaten by bigger creatures that are eaten by bigger creatures. And by the time you reach marine mammals, they have phenomenally high levels. And they have found, you know, marine mammals washed ashore, you know, killer whales, dolphins, with incredibly high levels of flame retardant chemicals, and also PCBs, which are a kind of flame retardant that was phased out in the 70s. That's the other thing about these chemicals. Ones that were phased out, you know, nearly 50 years ago, they're still in our marine mammals, in our wildlife, in our environment. So these are decisions for a long time to use them. So I know the But anyway, it's a real problem for marine mammals because they're at the top of the marine food chain. I saw a paper saying that dragonflies, they're at the top of the insect food chain, had high levels of these fluorinated stain and water repellents. So, yeah, we're contaminating our world and our planet. And I just want to say optimistically, I don't think it's necessary. I actually want to do another plug for our six classes concept, because most of the uses of these chemicals, we don't really need them. So we don't try to ban chemicals, but we say if anything is a fluorinated chemical, it's a molecule that's going to be on the planet forever. All the ones we studied are harmful. We're never going to study all 3,000 of them. But before you use a fluorinated chemical, say, do I really need this chemical given the potential for harm? And I think if people just can ask that question, particularly if manufacturers and retailers can ask that question, we can reduce the use of these chemicals by 50, 60, maybe 90% and all be healthier. So I feel really optimistic that there is a way out of this. And I think it's through purchasing, for informed purchasers, but it's hard for consumers. The purchasers should be manufacturers and retailers. You know, if IKEA says we're not going to use any fluorinated chemicals in any of our products worldwide, that solves the problem for consumers, and it reduces the use greatly. Or,
well, how do consumers reach manufacturers? I mean, you know, is there any way to have a say? What can people do that would to see that change come about?
Well, they can certainly say, I don't want fluorinated chemicals. You know, they, if they're going to buy, well, themselves, if they're going to buy furniture and they say, do you want a stain repellent treatment on your furniture or your rug? The answer should be no, because those chemicals are going to end up in you in the first place, stay in your body for a while, but they'll never break down. They don't even break down in your body. Eventually they leave, but they stay on the planet forever. So consumers, that's a simple example. You know, they could educate themselves. The fluorinated chemicals, I think, are the worst. They're used in cosmetics. So, you know, if you're buying cosmetics, look for F-L-O-U-R. There are a few other words that connote them. We have them in our on our website. If you go to sixclasses.org, there are a number of hints and in these short videos. So you can educate yourself about the six classes, kind of the worst of the worst, and avoid them as best you can. But again, I think companies have a responsibility. You know, several of the big commercial furniture companies said, yes, we want to get rid of fluorinated chemicals. We won't offer the stain repellent treatments on our chairs. But those fluorinated chemicals are useful. They're like slippery. And they said, you know, there's a ball bearing in our chair that only works well with a fluorinated chemical. Well, to my mind, if you need it on a little ball bearing in your chair, fine. Just don't coat your chair in it. You know, so I, as I say, I feel optimistic that if companies, retailers, manufacturers, designers, people who design products, architects who decide what go into buildings, if these people can get educated and really avoid these harmful families of chemicals, except when they're really needed. So I'm not saying never use them, but really avoid them. It can make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to what we began the show with, which was the discussion of Linda Birnbaum and the questions of the Trump administration's science committee. What is their agenda here in attacking her? What do you think they're going for? And, you don't have a crystal ball. I understand that. But, what do we have to kind of look out for and stay informed about in terms of the science and regulation of toxic chemicals in this administration?
Well, I wouldn't go from this really ridiculous attack on Linda to a bigger, it doesn't look good, but the fact is this is one example, and indeed Lamar Smith was attacking Linda during the Obama administration. They had a hearing on the report on carcinogens. Said that styrene was a carcinogen, which it is. And this same committee investigated Linda. And I have to say, I don't know if you were following that. I listened to the hearing. Linda was brilliant. The Democrats on the committee asked great questions. And the Republicans came away with eggs on their face, seriously. And it was really, nothing happened. I suspect that's going to be the case with this, because it is so ridiculous. Will the Trump administration really take the side of the chemical industry? I hope not. Chemicals haven't been as polarized, as I said, the way climate change. It's a tragedy that climate change has become so polarized. It's horrible.
Indeed, yes.
And ridiculous, that they're... we work with Republicans a lot, people who manufacture or retailers, and they're sensible people, and they believe in climate change. It's like not everybody is like that, and they don't want to. I'd say with toxic chemicals, everybody knows, has someone close to them who's had cancer or they've had it, and everybody knows people who have children who have neurological impairments. And it's a tragedy. Each one of these is a tragedy, or couples who can't have children. And it's really clear that cancer, neurological impairments, infertility are associated with exposure to these chemicals, and nobody wants that. So my hope is that this will not become polarized. There are outliers like Lamar Smith attacking Linda, which, as I said, I think is just ridiculous. I frankly think it'll be like it was a few years ago when they had the hearing, because, as you pointed out, he's being funded by the chemical companies to attack legitimate science, and what Linda did is completely legitimate science. So I'm actually not so worried, because it's so ridiculous. And I hope it does not donate a bigger shift than just this, peculiar committee. And indeed, what I think is, out of all this, everybody needs to work on voter registration and voting. I think that is the most important thing, is to get people to vote, because that's what I've seen in my experience. I spent a year trekking across the Himalayas from one end to the other, which was the most amazing year of my life. I wrote a book called Breaking Trail, A Climbing Life, if anybody wants to read about it. And we happened to walk through the Indian Himalayas during elections. And in India, everybody votes. I can't remember. It was like 95% of the people. And they were standing in long lines to vote. And it was so dramatic. And in so many countries, everyone votes. And in the U.S., less than half of us vote. And that means a small number of people can impact what happens to all of us. And I also think it's really important that young people vote. It's not quite right, but, it's 18% of 18-year-olds, 19% of 19-year-olds, that kind of percentage. And so I just hope, I'm at Berkeley, and, we've had big women's marches, lots of marches, and lots of students marching, and I'm just hoping they're all voting. So anyway, I think that right now is the most important thing, is for people to really, everybody needs to vote, and then we probably will not have so many people like Wimar Smith being able to do this ridiculous investigation of Linda. Anyway, I don't know if that was off topic, but that's what I think.
No. The show is called Connect the Dots, and, you know, so we do talk about that. I mean, it's not just like I look at the face cream, but I don't look at who I elect for office, and we dissociate in that way. I'm not really a proponent of that, as regular listeners to this show know. And I would add to what you're saying, because I think it's really important for everyone's vote, but I also think it's important for everyone's vote to be counted. And, you know, not just when, you know, we get a bad result or a result that we don't like, do we jump up and cry foul. For, you know, everyone's vote to be counted, that means that we need a nonpartisan effort to really seriously look into election integrity. And I've done many shows on this, which are available in the Connect the Dots archive at connectthedots.podbean.com, which is where this show will be archived as well. People can pass it along and listen to it later. If we don't have the vote guaranteed, if people's votes are being statistically manipulated by, you know, because we don't have hand-counted paper ballots and trains of, you know, kind of counting and with many eyes upon it, then we're kind of sending people down a rocky road that will also not have a good outcome. So I feel that the time to guarantee the vote and assure that we're voting in a way that cannot be manipulated is now. And I'm actually, as you know, more interested in that happening than looking back and trying to second guess what may have happened or not happened, you know, in the past election. We have to really take that seriously going forward, or, you know, people will register. I mean, I know many people, you're in the state of California, who were bumped from the rolls. Long-standing voters were bumped from the rolls, you know, and that there was never a proper validation of some of those votes. And people's votes were bumped from the rolls. Whole apartment buildings in certain districts of New York, people were bumped from the roads. So I think we have to be you know, kind of own up to that and make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, otherwise, you know, the voter registration won't mean much if we're voting through machines that can be technologically manipulated by we don't know whom. So anyway, I would just add that. So otherwise, I agree with you, and I think it's great that people are sort of showing up and getting more involved. It's a step-by-step process. And, you know, overturning Citizens United is another thing that's very important, so that we don't have too heavy a hand of certain industries on legislators and hence on government rules. All of that is connected to, you know, what we're discussing today with Arlene Blum of the Green Policy Science Institute, which is toxic chemicals, how they're studied, how they're regulated, how they affect us, and other forms of living beings around the world, and what we need to know in order to do what we can to protect ourselves. So that's our topic today on Connect the Dots. Well, it's been really fascinating speaking with you about all of this. How did you first get involved in doing what you do?
Well, goes back to mountain climbing. I was climbing a mountain in the Indian Himalayas in the mid-70s with America's most brilliant young rock climber, who was also an early environmentalist, and he fell to his death tragically. And I wanted to do something for the environment in his memory, and learned about the flame retardants in children's pajamas. At the time, I was a postdoctoral fellow at Stanford studying how proteins fold, and I thought that wasn't important. It turns out it's really important. But anyway, I stopped doing that and did the work on flame retardants and, you know, discovered, if you know this, chemicals that go into our mouths. Foods, drugs, and pesticides are regulated, but other chemicals like flame retardants, stain repellents, are really not regulated by our government. So I learned that, and as I told you earlier, we discovered that the Tris in kids' pajamas went into the children, was cancer-causing, and were able to stop it very rapidly back in the mid-70s. So that's how it started, and I did work in the 70s on chemicals, and then when Reagan became president in 1980, it was a bit like now. The people at the EPA who were good scientists were suddenly told they couldn't do science, and it seemed like a bad time to do the kind of work I wanted to, so I actually did what I'd always dreamed of, walking across the whole Himalayas, as I mentioned, where I saw people voting all the way across the Himalayas, and then I actually took 26 years off from science, raised a family, and it was about a decade ago when I learned that the same Tris we'd gotten out of kids' pajamas was back in the nation's furniture, and thought in the 70s it took like 3 months to solve that, and I thought, well, we'll solve that in 3 months, but it took more like nearly a decade to change standards so that flame retardants are no longer required in our furniture. Anyway, it's kind
of a long answer. Thank you so much. That is really great work. I want to refer our listeners to the greensciencepolicy.org for all of the videos that our guest today, Arlene Blum, has been discussing. A lot of other interesting topics are covered on the website, and you can learn a lot more. Thank you so much for being with us today, Arlene, on Connect the Dots. It's been really enlightening and a great conversation. And, you know, congratulations on the work you've done and continue to do.
Well, thank you. And if people go to sixclasses.org, that they can see the videos also. And we send out once a month a newsletter, an e-newsletter, or also quarterly, whichever people prefer, about how they can reduce toxics and be healthier. So they can go to greensciencepolicy.org or sixclasses.org and sign up. So I hope some of your listeners will sign up and hear from us once a month or four times a year about reducing
toxins. That's great. That's a great thing to do. And also, listeners, if you've enjoyed this program, please do share it on social media. The program will be available at the connectthedots.podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, .com, and share it with others to continue the education and conversation. So thank you to everyone for being with us this week on Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. So be well, stand tall, keep marching forward with all our relations.
There was day and there was night, and there was dark and there was light. There was pink and there was the sky.